Commentary is on the line.
Okay, so we are holding at the bottom of Ein Gimel on the Bays. Technically, today should really be Ein Hey. We'll see what we can do. Okay, we started talking about a case where a person gives money to somebody else to buy wine for him. The guy carelessly doesn't go and buy the wine. Afterwards, then the guy has a valid complaint against him. If you had bought me wine at a cheaper price, I could now be reselling it. You caused me a loss, therefore you have to reimburse me. He has to reimburse him according to the price where that he would have been. He would have to buy as much wine for him as he could have bought at the cheap price in the place of Zolshafat that we said, where you could buy wine cheap.
Initial time.
In other words, and so like this, you know, and if it turns out that now the prices are higher, fine. Shliach will have to cover it out of pocket. Okay, so we said, the last thing we said was that Amemar had said, that Amemar quoted Rav Zvidman Hadar saying that there's a difference whether you told the Shliach to buy Yayin Stam versus Yayin Zeh. You told him to buy Yayin Stam, sure, he's 100% responsible because he would have been able to find some wine, but if you tell him Yayin Zeh, a certain vintage, a certain type or whatever, it's not necessarily in his hands. Who says there would have been any of that available to sell? Therefore, he has a valid counterclaim. It's true, I was careless, I didn't go there, but even if I had gone there, who says there would have been any of that type to buy? That's where we're holding. And therefore, he should be potter. Therefore, you shouldn't make him, you make him either you just have him return the money to the Mishalayah, and the Mishalayah will go buy wine himself, or he'll go buy wine now, but you can't make him responsible for the fact that he didn't buy that kind of wine at the cheaper price, because not necessarily would it have been available then.
Unless you can prove that it was available.
If you could, okay. Okay. Yeah. So that's where we're holding. Four lines from the bottom of Ein Gimel Amud Beis. Rav Ashi, I'm after the Yayin Stam Nami Loi. Actually, no. Even if you told the guy to just buy Yayin Stam, still you can't make him responsible to buy to later on buy wine at the amount that would have been available for the cheaper price, and he'll have to cover the difference. My time, Asmachti. Why? Because even if he guaranteed, even if he said that if I don't buy it, I will be on the hook and I'll pay out of my own money, it's only an Asmachta. There was no Kinyan involved. And as we've talked about the other day, an asmachta is not kona. Therefore, you can't hold him responsible on the basis of an asmachta.
Which is a verbal commitment.
It's a verbal commitment. Well, we talked the other day, and Tosfos talks at some length over here about the different possibilities. It's not realistic. It's exaggerated compared to it's something that's lav biyodeh. It's not necessarily biyodeh. It's not necessarily something that's completely in his hands. Whatever the different possibilities, and again, the Rambam had said any time you make a conditional agreement and you don't say me'achsha or anything like that, or you don't have kinyan, then it's an asmachta. So the question is, well, Rav Ashi, ma'ishna me'ah ditznan? According to Rav Ashi, then, why is it different than the case, which we will learn about later in the Masechta, where you have an oris, you have an oris who was supposed to be taking care of a field, he's supposed to be planting it and plowing it and whatever, he didn't, and the agreement when the oris first starts the job is, he says, if I leave the field fallow and I don't work it, then I will pay the amount that the field would have been expected to produce out of the best of my property. So we don't consider that asmachta. Why is it in this case considered asmachta?
He has no other thing, no contract, no kinyan.
No, we're talking about there's a contract over there. There's a contract he signs at the time that says, fine, but okay, so over here there may have been unless there's an actual kinyan on it, the fact that it's a contract is neither here nor there. All it means is he wrote a piece of paper that says that.
You still need a kinyan?
No, not necessarily. That's the thing. Just because it's written in a paper doesn't mean that there was a kinyan. So the answer is halsam biyada. You need a kinyan in order to.
Even with a paper.
Yeah. The answer is halsam biyada, halchala biyada. That's the difference. Over there, it's completely in his hands. He could have planted the field. He got careless and didn't. Here, it's not completely biyada because the fact of the matter is you do have other parties involved. You do need a seller to sell him wine. What if, for whatever reason, everybody boycotts him and nobody sells him wine? It's not completely biyada. Therefore, you can't say his saying that if I don't buy wine for you, I will be on the hook to pay you. You can't say that that's considered realistic.
Unless, again, you have proof that you could.
If you have proof, maybe, but then okay. No, but the point is, at the time when he made this agreement, he didn't know whether it was going to be or not. At the time, therefore, it was an asmachta. It wasn't a full-fledged commit.
And then kinyan.
And if you had a kinyan, that would be different.
Okay.
So again, that's Tosfos discusses over here. You can see the long Tosfos over here, which among other things discusses the whole question of what exactly makes it an asmachta. Can you be koine on the basis of a verbal agreement, etc.? Yeah. Okay. Omar Rava. Another din related to this, Hani Beit Losa Diyabi Zuzil Chad Lemizban Lahumidi, if three people give money to one person to buy something for them, Vizovan l'chad minayu, and he buys it having in mind only one of them. Zovan l'chulu, we say that what he bought is considered to be for all three of them equally. They all three get to share in it. However, however, that only applies if each one's money is not bundled up separately. But if their money is bundled up separately, Lamanda Zavan Zavan or Lamanda Loi Zavan Loi Zavan, then whichever one's money he used is the one that it was bought for, and whichever not is not.
So that's it. Three people.
So Reuben, Shimon, and Levi all gave him money. Right. There is, by the way, there is machlokes for showing him. Do we mean that the person, do we mean they all gave it to Yehuda? Do we mean Yehuda then bundled up each one's money separately and then ended up using only one of the bundles? Or does it mean what he did as far as bundling doesn't make a difference? It's just Reuben, Shimon, and Levi themselves bundled up their money individually before giving it to him, as opposed to giving him all as one.
There's three people. Each one of them gives, asks him to buy a lottery ticket and gives him a dollar, and they win.
That's different. He bought a lottery ticket for each one of them. Here we're talking about, let's say, a lottery ticket costs a dollar. Let's say each one gives him 33 cents. Each one gives him 33 cents. We're saying that what he bought was on behalf of all of them. On the other hand, if Sar v'chosim inish l'chode, if each one 33 cents are separate, then whichever one he spent, it goes to them. With the, in this case, okay, the ticket costs a dollar. So in that case, then if he only used 66 cents, then he would have put in another 33 of his own money, whatever. So then he owns 1/3 of the ticket. That sort of thing. Amar Papi Mishmei D'Rav, another din as far as Kenyan. Hai Situmta Kanya, a Situmta makes a valid kinyan. What is a situmta? There's a lot of different explanations. Rashi says that it means when you buy a lot of barrels of wine at the same time, the storekeeper marks the barrels that you bought with some kind of stamp or some kind of symbol. And then later on, you bring them to the store to sell them at retail. So all the marked ones are the ones that you know are going to be going to this guy. There's a lot of different other explanations what situmta is. One other interesting one is it means a sort of symbolic thing where you take a piece of metal, you take like a disc of uncoined metal, an asimon, like we learned about in the previous pedic, and you give it to the, when you're finishing the kinyan, you give it to the other guy as a symbol, sort of almost like halifin, but not really, as a symbol that with this we're concluding the transaction. Mm-hmm. So that is koyan. Lamai Hilsa, to what purpose do we say that it makes a kinyan? Rav Chaviva Amla Mishni Amamish, Rav Chaviva says it means literally the kinyan is completely done at that point. Neither one can go back on it. Rabbanan Amri La Kabula Ele Mishapara. The Rabbanan say no, it only means insofar as Mishapara. If at that point, after the Situmta, after the marking of the barrel, or the giving of the disc or whatever, if the token, if one of them wanted to renege on the deal, he would have to accept Mishapara. But he could validly, if he's willing to accept that, he could validly renege on it.
It's like a simon.
The hilchos al kabula ele mishapara. The halacha is, in fact, according to the Rabbanan, that it's only as far as mishapara. However, over astrin in the hivul of mikni mamish. However, in a place where the local minhag is that a situmta makes a full kinyan, that then minhag oikar halacha is called kanu. Then at that point he's koyne. And as a matter of fact, actually, the poskim achronim have an interesting time with this as far as various things that are done nowadays that are generally accepted. One popular case they talk about, for example, is in the diamond dealing world. The minhag among diamond dealers, originally it started among Jewish diamond dealers, I'm given to understand, even the goyim among them do it now, is a diamond deal is not finalized until they shake hands on it and say mazel b'bracha. That would be an example of situmta. There's none of the regular kinyanim api halacha. There's no meshicha. There's no whatever. However, when they shake hands and say mazel bracha, that's situmta. The minhag among diamond dealers is not considered. But we're saying that not, since it's generally accepted among the dealers that that's how it works, that makes the deal finalized, and that's it. The deal is finalized. There is a discussion whether it's midaraisa, midarabanan, but whatever. Some say it's even midaraisa. But because the minhag is halacha, basically, the local minhag is, yeah. There's also they talk about another interesting example actually that comes up is when you call someplace on the phone and give them a credit card to buy something. That's another example of situmta. Again, you don't have there's no meshicha, there's no nothing, no actual money has even changed hands, let alone meshicha or anything like that. However, it's situmta. It's generally accepted in modern society that is a valid way of buying something.
And it's a kinyan.
And therefore, that would be a kinyan.
Not when a credit card is is debited or credited.
Well, that we said, or asked for it in a higul or mikni mamash. It depends when you give somebody a credit card over the phone. Is the understanding at that point you bought the thing and that's it? You can't go back on it. Or is there still the understanding you have a day or 2 days or whatever it is to change your mind? That'll depend. The Mishnah had said, "Hoyahu tchilul akotzrim." So the Mishnah had said that, let's say you have a farmer who was the first one to harvest his grain. Then at that point, you can already make a psika, you can already make a deal with him to lock in the price for that grain, because yeshlo, even though there's no prevailing price yet, because he's the first one to have his grain that season. So there's no yotza hashar. However, there's yeshlo, he actually has grain. And we gave a bunch of examples in the Mishnah that you can do that with a pile of grain, you can do that with a bucket full of grapes that are going to be pressed into wine, the bucket full of olives. We had a number of
to have a former can have a certain amount.
We're going to see about that later on Ayin Hey, how much he has to have. Wait, for now, yeah. Okay. How close does it have to be? Now, so how close does it have to be to actually being finished in order before you can make such a deal? Amar Rav, mechusa shtayim poisik, shalosh enim poisik. So Rav says, if there's only two things that have to be done to make it fully ready, then you're allowed to be posik at that point, because at that point it's close enough to consider yeshloi. But if there's three or more, then you can't, because that's not considered yeshloi yet. Shmuel says, it doesn't depend how many. It depends on what are the stages that still need to be done. Are they something that need to be done by humans, or is it something that happens naturally? Bidei shamayim. Bidei adam afilu meya poisik. If it's things that are done by humans, even if there's 100 steps left to do, you can still be poisik because he has the ability to do all those 100 steps. Therefore, it's considered yeshlo. Bidei shamayim afilu achas enim poisik. But if there's even one thing that needs to be done, bidei shamayim, then you can't even do even if there's only one of them left, because what if it doesn't happen? So let's go through the examples in the Mishnah and see how those fit with these two opinions. Tanan, we learned in the Mishnah, poisikim ala gadish, that you can be poisik with somebody about the pile of grain. Now let's consider the pile of grain. You're saying, in other words, that he's going to give you a pile of grain. We're assuming at this point that he doesn't yet have the grain in a pile. It still has yet several processes to do before it eventually gets piled, and therefore, how can we poisik? Maybe the Gadish is you pile it up right after you harvest, right after you harvest, you pile all the unprocessed grain into a pile. Later on, you take it, you thresh it, you winnow it, you whatever, and then eventually you have a pile of clean grain. So, and that's the point that you'd be buying it from him. So, you have then the following steps are missing. It has to be spread out in the sun. L'mevash, it has to dry. U'lmeidash, and thresh it. U'midra, and then it has to be winnowed, where after you've threshed it, you have to get rid of all the shells and then straw and whatever that's mixed in with it by winnowing it, by having it blow away in the wind. The typical way, as we'll see in the Gemara, is that you'd take like a pitchfork or whatever, you'd throw it up into the air. When there's a strong wind blowing, the wind would blow away the shells and the straw and all the other light stuff, mm-hmm. and the kernels, which are heavy, would fall back down to the ground. So then you're missing all those steps. According to Rav, how does that work? The answer is you're going to shod a b'cham of a yavish. We're talking about when you post it, is it's already been placed out to dry, and it's already dried, in fact, so then it's only missing two steps.
That's fine.
Two steps is still okay. According to Rav, two steps is still good. The question is, what about according to Shmuel, who says that it depends whether it's a natural process or not? Fine, it's already dried, so you've taken care of that process. What about the Hamachot Midra? You still be winnowing, which requires a wind. A wind is a natural thing. It's Bidei Shemayim. What if there's no wind? The answer is Epsha B'Nas Vasa. True, but you can get away with it if you don't have a wind available. Then you can sift it with a sieve. It's a slower process to get out the grain like that and leave behind, and then separate the grain from the straw. But you can do it with sieves, and therefore even Shmuel would agree that it's considered as something that could conceivably be done midday autumn. Usually you wouldn't because it would be a big hassle, but you could conceivably do it that way. The truth is I'm not sure why. I mean, I would have thought nafavasa might also mean meloshin menis, like waving. Like I would have thought the explanation could also be if there's no wind, you create wind by taking sheets or whatever and waving them to create wind. I have no idea why Rashi doesn't explain it that way. Okay, onward. Yeah. Okay. We said Vala Ovit Shalanovin. We said you can make a deal as far as a bucket of grapes where you're going to be prepaying for the wine. Again, the same question. Vamachosa Michmar, Lakota, there are several steps that need to be done. The grapes need to be heated up, because we said the other day that's the point of putting them in the bucket, is that they sit on top of each other, they heat up, they soften, so that you'll get more juice out of them.
Michmar
means to heat them up. Just because they're pressed together, yeah. So they create like their own natural heat, yeah. They then have to be taken into the, or maybe you do actually heat them up. Maybe you warm up the room. I don't know. Anyway, you have to take them into the pressing, into the pressing, the place where they're going to be pressed, into the press. Lemedash, you need to actually press them. You trample the grapes to press them. Well, the mingad, and you need to make the juice flow into the pit. The usual typical way that they do it is you had sort of an upper pit. We'll learn a lot about this in Avodah Zarah next year, Bez Hashem. We'll learn about the whole winemaking process. You'd have sort of an upper pit, which is called the gas, which is where you'd put in the grapes over there and trample them. And then the wine would flow from there, the juice would flow from there into a lower area, into a lower pool, which is called the burr, where it would sit there for a while and eventually ferment. Today it's all done with machines. That's fine. The point is, again, you have several steps missing. How can you already do when you have the bucket of grapes before all these steps, according to Rav, where you can have two? The answer is, just like we will see in a few lines, that when it comes to the olives, Rav Chia explained, we're not talking about they're just in the bucket. We're talking about they've already been heated up. They've already been heated up. Same thing you can answer over here. As far as the grapes, it means they weren't just freshly placed in the bucket. They've already been heated up there. So therefore, that's one step that you took care of.
And that's good enough.
Well, the question is, fine, but you still have three steps missing. You have to bring them to the press, you have to press them, and you have to make it flow. So those three steps, according to Rav, how does that work? The answer is, we're talking about the kind of place where the one who buys the wine is the one who's responsible to make it to make sure that it flows smoothly into the
press it.
No. So in other words, I'm buying wine from you in advance. You already have your grapes have already been heated up.
Right.
They're all ready for pressing.
Right.
You have two steps to do at this point. You have to bring them to the gas, to the upper area over there, the pressing area, and you have to press them. You have to trample them.
Right.
After that, the rule is it's my responsibility to make sure that the juice that's pressed out of there actually ends up flowing down into the burr where it will start fermenting, and it's at that point I'm responsible for it. So then, fine, there's only two steps you need to do.
But you gave you the money to buy the wine.
I gave you the money to buy the wine in advance, right, because I wanted to lock in the price. Because once it's the kind of place where that's the rule. When I buy wine from you, the understanding is that I'm going to be responsible as soon as you're done with the pressing, then it's already in my rishus. So fine, then in that case, only two steps are missing. Okay, Valamatan Shalzeisa, we said the same thing with a bucket of grapes. Same problem. They have to first be heated up. They have to be brought into the press, into the pressing room, the beis habad. Lemedash, they have to be pressed. Or lemingad, and the juice, the oil, has to be made to flow into the pit. Same idea.
Mingad is
Russian. It means to flow.
Negev?
I'm not sure if it's related to the Hebrew word negev, but in Aramaic, nogad means to flow, to go from, to stretch out, kind of, yeah. And the answer is, Tony Rabchiyah, Koyma Shalzeisim. Rabchiyah explains that we're not just talking about the olives that have just been placed in the bucket, we're talking about they've already been heated and softened. Okay, the question is, well, Halika class, fine, we still have three steps missing. And the answer is, again, same idea as with the grapes, that we're talking about a place where the minig is, as soon as you've done pressing, as soon as you put the olive into the press and crush them, after that, it's my responsibility to make sure that it flows into the burr, and I'll collect it from there. Tosfos asked the question, why did Rabchiyah only mention his case about the olives, and we had to explain that the same thing applies to grapes. The grapes I mentioned earlier in the Mishnah. Why didn't Rabchiyah? And Tosfos answers Rabchiyah should have said, ala koyme shol anovim. And then we would understand from that the same thing applies to the next case of the Mishnah olives. So Tosfos says, because it may be that it's not as common to heat up grapes as olives. Olives you want to heat up in order to get out the maximum amount of oil. All grapes, it's not necessarily so common. The Gemara was asking, because what if you need to? And the answer is, if it's a place where it's common to, then yes, you have to use the same answer Rabchiyah said. that's in place.
Olives are more compact, so you would.
So you would need to soften them. I guess. I guess that's that. Yeah.
Whereas grapes.
Whereas grapes, so naturally soft. Yeah. Yeah. That's convenient. Okay. Okay. Next. When you said v'alav beitzim shel yotzer, we said you're allowed to be posik in advance about the bowls of clay that are made by a potter, which eventually are going to be made into pots and dishes and whatever. Again, the same problem on my. You're still missing several steps. They have to be, mafufi means to roll them into the right shape of bowl, and not the right shape, but the right size, rather. We assume, in other words, when we said beitzim shel yotzer, what we assumed is he starts out making them standard size bowls of clay. Afterwards, he's going to make them bigger or smaller, as the case may be, depending what size container he's going to be making out of them. That's called mafufi, where you make it into the exact size. No, that's later when you put it on the potter's wheel. You have to start out with a bowl of clay, though, of the right size.
Right.
So he'll start out, let's say, with egg-sized bowls.
Right.
But later on, if he's going to be making larger dishes, he'll have to clump a few such bowls together and make them into one big bowl.
Yeah.
If he's making smaller containers, yeah, whatever. So you need lafufi, which is to roll them into the right size, via bushi, and dry them. Ayuli latun, and in other words, after you make them into the right shape, via bushi, and dry them. Ayuli latuna, putting them into the oven, the mistras, burning them, baking them. Yeah, whatever. Whatever you call it. Pull them made back and taking them out. You're missing five steps. According to Rav, how does that work? The answer is you're going to malachsafi of issue. Fine, we're talking about that. We're talking about that you already had the first two things were done. You already have, the guy made them into the right size and shape, and he already dried them. At that point is when you're being kosik on them. Which means, Rashi says, in other words, that what that means is, when we said in the Mishnah, Allah, beitzim shel yotzer, when we assume that beitzim means they're just bowls at this point, they're just clumps, actually you have to understand it as not beitzim, but rather bitzim. Bitzim is Moloshin bitza, which means mud. They've already been, they're in the right shape, but they're just still mud because they're just still clay because it's unfired. Firing, that's the word for it.
Firing,
yeah. So therefore, so you already have, they've already been, it's bitzim shel yotzer, they've already been made into the proper shape, still as raw clay. They've already been dried. Now you only have three steps left to do. Put it in the oven, fire it, and take it out. Okay, the question is, the answer is, but that's still three steps are missing. The answer is ba'asra. Now, who does oven, who does mafik? Same idea as before. We're talking about a place where the minig is. If you buy the utensils, you're responsible for taking them out of the oven. The potter will be responsible for making them the right shape.
So that's the purpose of doing the third step.
Right. So the maker at this point, when you're posik with him, only has two steps left to do. He has to put it into the oven and fire it. At that point, it becomes your responsibility. Then we said v'alastid mishi shakenu v'kipshon. We said that you're allowed to be posik on lime once it's been sunk down into the oven. Where, in other words, you had the you put the wood and the limestone and whatever into the oven, into the kiln. Again, the question is v'amachosim mikla, but you're still missing a few steps. You have to burn it v'apuki and then take the burnt limestone out of there. Umedak, and then you have to make it into a powder. Which Rashi describes interestingly the process, how you do it. They do it sometimes even nowadays when they need limestone, they use it in steel making and whatever, is you put a little bit of water onto the burnt limestone and it creates a chemical reaction which turns it into a powder.
Really?
Yes. I was looking it up online. You can find videos of it on YouTube. It's interesting, yeah. Look in the Rashi, you made that. You have an interesting example of a little chemical reaction over there. After the stones are burnt, they're like burnt pieces,
right.
burnt large chunks. You take them out of the kiln. You put a little water into them. You pile them. And they become pulverized on their own. They become like ground up flour. Like ground up flour. The water creates a chemical reaction that causes it to break apart. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, you're missing all those steps. The answer is Vasudah who dissolve and who die. Same answer is the third step is something that would be done by the buyer. You, the maker of the seed, are responsible for putting it into the kiln and firing it and burning it. Once at that point you take it out, and then at that point the other guy is responsible for putting in the water and then causing it to become pulverized. Yeah. Okay, so the question is, will Shmuel Dama be de Adam Afilo Meya Paisik? fine, we can ask the question the other way around on Shmuel. Shmuel said that as long as the steps are bidei Adam, then it doesn't matter how many there are. Lomeli, Mishi Shak Eno Bakivshan. According to Shmuel, why would the Mishnah only say you can be posik on limestone once it's already been placed in the kiln, in the oven? Lechora, according to Shmuel, even before that, once you have the wood and the limestone and everything already ready, at that point you should be able to be posik. Everything else at that point is bidei Adam. You're going to put it into the kiln, you're going to fire it, you're going to pulverize it. No, according to Shmuel, it shouldn't matter. Even if the seller is doing all that, according to Shmuel, as long as it's bidei Adam, we don't care how many steps there are left, because you have the ability to do them one after the other. So according to Shmuel, why do you need to say Mishi Shakdena Makivshan? Only once you place the wood and the limestone in the kiln, then you're allowed to be posted. The answer is Ema Mishi Roy the Shakdena Makivshan. You're right. According to Shmuel, you have to understand Mishi Shakdena Makivshan doesn't mean that you actually put it into the kiln. It means it's ready for it. You already have all the raw material. You have the wood, you have the stones, you have whatever else you need. It's all ready to go. According to Shmuel, at that point, you can be posted. The halacha, by the way, is like that.
Two steps left only.
Okay. Then we said Vala Beitzim Shoyotze. Going back now, we said that you can be posik on the balls of clay but from a potter, which, as we said, okay, only if there's two steps left. Turn it up, Baron. Ein posikim al Beitzim Shoyotze ad sheyosu. Give it a mayor. The mayor says you cannot be posik on the balls of clay of the potter until they're actually made, and like we said before, made meaning, in other words, they're already shaped and dried, according to that. Amar Rav Yosi, b'med v'ram amarim, v'af lovam. When is that talking about that you need to have it already ready is when it's white clay. Now, white clay is not very common. It's not so easy to find. So therefore, you need to have actually the other. You need to actually have some in your possession because otherwise you'll have a problem with ribbons. Ava v'ofer shachar, but if it's black clay, black dirt, doing kvachananya v'chabreseh, kvashichin v'chabreseh, like the kind of thing that they use to make pottery in kvachananya and kvashichin in the nearby areas, these are areas in the Galil, poskin, then you're able to be posik even before the guy has already made them into balls, because there's always yeshloi. Somebody already has in the neighborhood, somebody is always going to have that type.
I mean Galil and
no, what we mean is, we're giving the Galil as an example. The point is, and it was white clay, like the kind they used to make China,
right,
is not as common. Therefore, you need to have yeshloi. And in fact, Rashi points out, that when they bring in such offalov, and ein machnisino, they say, "I'm a v'asi beitzim." They already bring it already mixed with water and made it into balls. But offer shachar, you can still have just the actual. You can have the raw dirt, which is going to be made into clay. That's enough because raw black dirt like that is common enough that you don't need to worry anymore. You don't need to worry. He won't have any. It's easy. It's easy to find.
Lime is different.
Yeah. Well, we didn't say lime. We're talking about white. But we're talking about white clay versus black. Yeah. Okay.
Black clay is very common.
Yeah. Exactly. So the Gemara tells, Amemo used to only give money in advance for clay utensils only after the seller already had the dirt in his house. This is all for shachar. We're talking about this is black dirt. So the question is, come on, who is he following in that? He could have mayor, if it was according to the mayor, I'm actually also. The mayor does not distinguish between black and white. He says you always need to have the bowls already made, and Ramemo is doing it before the bowls are made.
Ramemo was a late
one. Ramemo was an Amor, yeah.
A late one? Or
yeah, he was one of the later ones, yeah. And he could have Yossi, I'm actually shame, Lose Yesh Lose. And according to Yossi, you don't even need him to have it in his house. According to Yossi, you could be posted with somebody who makes clay utensils, even if he doesn't have any black dirt for clay on hand right now, because it's very commonly available. So who is that Meimah following? He seems to be somewhere between Rameyer and Rameyer and Rabbi Yossi. The answer is La'olam k'Rabbi Yossi. He is actually really following Rabbi Yossi. Or ba'asri, da'a Meimah oshik ofra. The difference is that where Meimah lived, even black dirt was hard to get a hold of. So therefore, he had to make sure the guy at least had it. Okay. Therefore, idim aile afra. So therefore, if the guy already had dirt in his house, some chadaite, therefore there would be smichot das. In other words, Rashi says it's not really a matter of ribbis in that case. It's a matter, and we're not so much concerned with the matter of ribbis. If the guy has the dirt available, then at that point, the smichot das, they both know this is a deal that's going to go through. V'yoyev lo zuzi, therefore he could give them money, and at that point, if either side is going to back out of the deal, there's going to be mishapara. V'yiloy lo sam chadaite, but if not, he has no smichot das, because the guy may not find such dirt available in Amemo's area that you couldn't easily find even black dirt like that. Therefore, there's no Mishapara because he only gave it to him just in case. So it's not really, we're not really dealing with the ribbist angle of it. We're dealing rather with the issue of, was there any kind of reasonable certainty that the guy would end up having the raw material to be able to make the clay dishes?
A ribbist would be in which instance in this case?
No, so according, the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. That offer shofar, it's common enough found that therefore there's no problem of ribbis with it.
Right.
However, Amemar had a different issue. Never mind ribbis. There's the question of, am I, when I give him money, is it guaranteed that there's going to be a deal over here? And so therefore, he would wait until the guy actually had the dirt in his possession, where then there's smich of das that he will actually do it.
But if we say that it's very commonly found...
In Amemar's area, it wasn't commonly found, but therefore, nevertheless, it's easy enough. It's not commonly found, but nevertheless, if he gives it, if we're worried about the ribbis angle, fine. It's still possible to go and find it. You just may have to go further out to get it, but you will be able to find it.
Whereas if there was no possibility...
If there was no possibility, then you would have then ribbis. Yeah. Then we said, we had a machlokas in the Mishnah as follows. We said the Tanakhama had said you can make a deal with somebody to prepay as far as manure all year round. Zevel is actually not the raw manure, but after it's already been cured, after it's ready to be used as fertilizer. We said Rabbi Yossi said you can only do it if you have Zevel Ba'ashba, if the guy actually has fertilizer available already in his manure pile. And then we had the Chachamim say that it's mutter. So the question is, Chachamim Hainu Tanakama, or the Chachamim just repeating what the Tanakama said, what's the point of that? Amar Rava, Yemosag Shamim Ikebenai. What we actually have here is a three-way machlokas concerning the winter. Namely, the Tanakama says, Kol Yemosag Shamim. You can do it any time during the year, winter or summer. Rabbi Yossi says, I agree it doesn't matter winter or summer, but you actually have to have Zevel Ba'ashva. The last Chachamim in the Mishnah are saying that it depends. During the summer, you don't need yeshla, because during the summer already, manure is produced all year round. But usually during the winter time is the time when it gets cured and then stepped on and trampled on and whatever in the street and turns into useful fertilizer. Comes the summer, therefore, even if you and yourself don't have fertilizer in your pile, somebody else will. Therefore, it's mutter. Whereas during the winter, not because nobody may have manure that's ready to be used as fertilizer. Because that's the time of year when it's being transformed from raw manure, from raw droppings into useful fertilizer, where it needs to cure, it needs to chemically change, whatever. Which part of that happens by being trampled on in the streets, whatever, yeah. So therefore, the later Chachamim, so the Tanakama would... The Tanakhama would be saying, therefore, that it doesn't matter. You can do it any time during the year. We always consider that yeshloi. Rabbi Yossi says only if actually yeshloi. The later Chachamim are saying we agree you don't actually have to have, but only if it's the time of year, namely Yemayzachama, when everybody is likely to have.
Which is the summer.
Yeah. Okay. Then we said a posiki v'kishayav gavaya. We said in the Mishnah that you're allowed to make a deal with somebody, but that's when you're being posik with the guy, you can say, I'm locking in the price now, however I want it to be understood that if later on the prices go down, then you're going to supply me at that lower price. You're allowed to do that. And then Rabbi Yehuda.
You don't do that, it would be ribbit.
No. No, it's not so much that it would be ribbit, but you're saying, in other words, right now the prices are $10 per bushel. I'm locking in the price because in case the price goes up later to $12 a bushel, I still want to get it at 10. But if later on it ends up going down to $8 a bushel, I expect you to supply me at that price.
Right.
Okay, tough customer. And Rabbi Hoda says you don't even need that. You don't even need to explicitly say that. Once the prices go down, he's entitled to say, give me at that price or refund me my money. Okay, so now we're going to have a case that bears on this. Hahu gaber de yoyv zuzid l'nidunya debei chamura. There was a person, a chosan, who gave money for a nadan, for a nadunya, for his father-in-law. Nadunya, Rashi explains over here, means like jewelry and cosmetics and whatever. What it is, he prepaid for the stuff that would be his father-in-law wanted. His father, he was engaged to somebody's daughter. His father-in-law gave him money, said, this is going to be for tachshitim, for jewelry and cosmetics and whatever for my daughter, for the chasana. You go and prepay the guys who make these things, and then this way we'll have it ready in time. La Safe Zone the Junior. Later on, the price of this kind of thing, of these cosmetics and jewelry, went down. So therefore, now the father-in-law argues, I don't want to have to get them at the original price. I'm going to go find somebody else to get it from for a cheaper price, or for you guys, from you guys for the cheaper price, whatever. Also, the Kamei de the Papa, so the case came to the Papa, Amalei, Ipaskasina Kashao Gavaya, Shoko Kashta. Fine. If you made up with him in advance that you will be allowed to get at the lower price, if there's a lower price later, then you're entitled to get according to the current price. The Eloi, Shoko Kamei Charter. And if not, then you're going to have to get it at the higher price. You're going to have to, you're locked into the deal.
Kashao
Gavaya means according to the amount where you can get more for the lesser price. What do you mean? What are you saying? What are you saying that if you didn't make such a deal, he's forced to take according to the original price? After all he did is pay money at this point. There was no meshicha or anything. Money does not create a kinyan. Why shouldn't he be able to back out anyway? You're right. I don't mean that he can't back out. I just mean he'd have to accept mishaparo as the usual rule when money has changed hands. Namely like this. If he agreed in advance that, let's say, for example, these things are selling for $10, but if they go down for $8, then I'll be entitled to a refund of two, or to be able to get more of the same amount, or to be able to get more of it, whatever. If he made that deal up in advance, and the seller wants to renege on it and says, I can't afford to sell it at that price, I want to stick to the original price, then the mocher, the seller, is going to have to be the one who's going to accept mishapara in order to be able
if
to do it.
If they had pre-stipulated.
Eli Posak, if they didn't make such a deal, lekeach kahadabei, it's probably going to be the lekeach, in this case the father-in-law, who wants to back out of the deal because he says, why should I buy from you for 10 when I can buy from somebody else for 8? So fine, the lekeach will be the one who has to accept mishapara. I'm not talking about it's true. If either one is willing to accept mishapara, sure, they can back out of the deal, but we're not getting into that. We're getting into, is there even mishapara or not? No, not is there Mishapara. Who is going to be the one who is likely to say, right. Yeah. Okay. Omelet of Inu Papa, Umimai Drabonan he depligia lady of Shimon, Ami Mois Lekanu. Now, what do we have? We have an Om Mishnah. When Om Mishnah is saying you have to explicitly have stated in advance that I want to also have the option for the lower price, if the lower price becomes available, who says that? Now, we have the Rabbanan and Om Mishnah versus Rabbi Huda. Fine. Who are these Rabbanan? Now, we had in the previous Perek, at the beginning of Perek HaZahav, we had the Chachamim, the Tanakama of the Mishnah of there, who said whichever one of the two parties wants to back out of the deal is going to have to accept Mishapara once money changed hands. And then we had Rabbi Yehuda, then not Rabbi Yehuda, we had Rabbi Shimon over there who said, who said, and what was the lashon he used? Kol shakesef biyado yado alo yana. Whoever has the money in his possession has the upper hand. Meaning, in other words, that Reb Shimon said that the moicher is able to back out of the deal without having to do mishpara because he has the money in his hand now. So,
once the money was given
to the moicher, Reb Shimon says the moicher is able to renege on it without having to accept mishpara. The lekeach at that point, if he wanted to get back his money, would have to accept mishpara. So. In our Mishnah, who says that the Tanakama of our Mishnah against Rabbi Yehuda is the same as the Rabbanon of that Mishnah in Azov? Who say that Mois absolutely does not make a Kenyan? And nevertheless, they would say that, fine, if you agreed in advance that I'm entitled to get the cheaper price if it's available, then you're allowed to, and if not, then not. Who says, Dumer Reb Shimon, maybe the Tanakhama of our Mishnah against Rabbi Yehuda is actually Reb Shimon. D'Amma Mois Koinis, where Reb Shimon says that basically Mois do create a Kinyan, Midaraisa.
That's not the halacha, though.
No, but the advantage of doing it this way, Tosfos says, is then you only have two opinions. Like this, if we say that our Mishnah is according to the Chachamim over there, then you have three opinions. You have the Chachamim of the Mishnah over there, as well as of our Mishnah. You have Reb Shimon, and you have Rabbi Yehuda. You would rather try to assume that there's fewer opinions than more. Yeah. So therefore, Reb Shimon would say like this: if you made up in advance that you're going to be able to get the lower price if it's available, fine, then you're entitled to get according to the current price. But if you didn't make such a deal, why are you forced to take it according to the original price? Because by giving money to the mocher, you've already created a kinyan at that point. So you don't have the ability to now say, well, the prices have gone down. I want more of it. Because Moritz, according to Rav Shimon, Moritz are Kohanim. According to Rav Shimon. Aval Rabbanon, but we could argue that according to the Rabbanon, Bein Pasach, Bein Le Pasach Shaka, we could argue that the Rabbanon of the Mishnah in Hazahav would be the same as Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah, who says whether you made that agreement in advance or not, Shaka Kihashta, you can get it according to the current price, because the Mois did not make a Kenyan, the Daita de Inish Atara Zila, because a person always has in mind that if there's a lower price later, he wants to be able to get that lower price. So therefore, if we go that way, the halacha is not like Rav Shimon, the halacha is like the Rabbanan. In that case, that would mean the halacha is like Rav Yehuda in our Mishnah. Whether Pasach or not, you're always entitled to the cheaper price.
Because that's what you expect.
Because that's what you expect. And therefore, going back to this case of the Nidunya, he would be entitled to say, to get his money back, or to say, I want it at the cheaper price.
Without
Mishapara, yeah. Amalei, so the Papa answers, who I guess it should probably be because it was the Rabbanan in plural who asked him whatever. Fine, you can say Rav Shimon said that the Lakeach is not allowed to change his mind, only the Mocher, if it's all still the same price. So that either it's still the same price from the beginning to the end, or Rashi says another possibility is, let's say you agreed you were going to pick up the merchandise right now. Rav Shimon, when Rav Shimon in the Mishnah and Hazah, when he says that kol shaketzef yada yada halal yona, maybe Rav Shimon is only talking about like this: if you bought it at $10 and the price is still $10, so fine. Then you can say that the lakeach has no ability to renege on the deal. Or Rashi says another possibility: let's say, for example, the agreement was I will buy it from you at $10 and pick it up right now. For whatever reason, he didn't pick it up. Later on, the price went down. Fine, you could argue, Rav Shimon could say, fine, when you bought it, you didn't know that the price was ever going to go. Now, never mind, you didn't know the price was going to go down. Your plan was to pick it up right away. Now, it's not my fault that you decided to delay.
What's b'chad tara?
B'chad tara means one price. Tara literally means a gate. Tara literally means a gate, because the prices are established at the gates of the city. Yeah. B'tre tare mi omer. Who says that Rav Shimon would say the same din when there's two different prices, like our Mishnah, when you knew to begin with you're not picking it up right away and you knew it's likely to go down in price, maybe even Rav Shimon would agree that Lakeach could change his mind in that case. Yeah. And after all, if you're not going to say like that, Misha part of Lakeach or Rav Shimon last night, are you telling me Rav Shimon would never say that, would you say that Rav Shimon would say that a lakeach never has the ability to invoke mishapara, to renege on the deal and say, fine, I'll accept mishapara? Because Rav Shimon said that the money is koine, obviously Rav Shimon has to agree there must be a case where the lakeach is subject to mishapara as well. In other words, there must be a case where lakeach can renege.
And that should be the case where...
That would be the case where the price changed. The chitema hochinami, so you might say, okay, maybe, yeah, maybe Rav Shimon does say that he never can do that. But we learn in the Braisa, but we say the Braisa that we quoted in Hazahab said, nevertheless, that's the halacha. Mikol makom literally means in all cases, that's the halacha. This is actually Rav Shimon himself says that Braisa over there. Nevertheless, what does he mean, mikol makom? If according to the Mishnah in Hazahab over there, he says that only the Moicher has the ability to renege on the deal once he received the money. The word mikol makom means that Rav Shimon is saying either one, the lakeach or the mercher, either of them has the ability to back out of the deal and get mishapara. So you see, Rav Shimon would agree that there's a case when the lakeach can back out and get mishapara. Necessarily, that must be when the price has gone down, where he says, now, if you don't want to give me at the new lower price, then I'm going to take my business elsewhere. But he has to accept mishapara.
Right.
Yeah. Ella, therefore we must say, we must necessarily be saying that Rav Shimon would say the lakeach has no ability to back out if the price is still the same. Or, like Rashi says, if he meant to pick it up originally when the price was stable and he only picked it up later when it changed. But evidently, Rav Shimon would agree that when the price changed, before the merchandise was picked up, when you originally were not going to pick it up right away, then the lakeach is able to renege. That would be the case. That would be the case that we're dealing with over here with the Nidunya. Amalei Rav Acha, right?
You prove that Rav Shimon would include both. So then you have to.
When our Mishnah is saying that the Chachamim say that only if you explicitly said I want to be able to get the lower price if it's available, then yes, and if not, then not. That wouldn't necessarily be a coincidence of Shimon. It's more logical to say that there are, in fact, three different opinions here. The Rabbanan, who say that, yes, Mois are not Kodesh, but nevertheless, you have to make the deal explicitly, if not, then not. You have Rabbi Shimon, who would say that you don't have to make it explicitly because Mois ain't in Kodesh, and you would have Rabbi Yehuda.
But then you would get Mishapara.
You should get Mishapara, yes. And you have Rabbi Yehuda, who says you don't need to explicitly say so originally, you're able to change your mind.
Without
Mishapara, yeah. But never mind. This you're talking about whether Mishapara or not. Never mind. Shouldn't there be a different reason why there's no Mishapara over here? The Shliach Shavi Meikara. Because after all, the father-in-law made the son-in-law a Shliach to buy this merchandise in the first place. And who's going to accept Mishapara over here? The Shliach shouldn't be accepting Mishapara because it's not his thing. The father-in-law shouldn't, because he can say, L'sakuni shtarticha v'lo l'abzi, I only sent you as a shliach to do good for me, not to mess things up for me. And like this, if you're causing me to have to accept mishapara, that would be l'abzi.
What's the expression?
L'sakuni shtarticha v'lo l'abzi, I sent you as a shliach to make things good, but not to mess things up for me. So either way, since we're dealing with a shliach over here, why is there mishapara anyway? What is your papa saying is mishapara? We're actually talking about the son-in-law over here. The shliach was not the son-in-law was not really a shliach. The father-in-law made a deal with the chassan that he's going to buy this stuff. The chassan himself is a merchant who regularly buys from one and sells to the other. He's like a middleman. So the father-in-law had made a deal with the chassan that he's going to buy the merchandise. He's going to buy the nedunya at such a price. The son-in-law on his own, not as a shliach, goes and finds somebody who's selling it at that price and is going to resell it to his father-in-law for a higher price. Fine, he's not a shliach then. He's the one who would have to accept mishapara. Or, Rashi says another possibility, that there was no, his father-in-law had never made the deal with him in the first place. The son-in-law, on his own initiative, decided to go and find somebody who's selling it cheaply and resell it to his father for the nedunya more expensive. Either way, he's not his father-in-law's shliach, so therefore, he's the one who would have to accept mishapara, is what her papa is saying. But yes, if he had actually been a shliach, then yeah, there's no mishapara.
He wants to make a business deal out of an adunia, I think.
Okay, you know what? maybe his father-in-law will see, hey, you know, look, I'm getting a very sharp son-in-law over here, you know. Okay. Mishnah says, Malva adam asaris of chitin b'chitin lozera, a person is allowed to lend wheat on condition that they will repay wheat to his adrisim, to his sharecroppers, lazera, to plant. So in other words, he's lending them a saw of grain in order to plant. They're going to repay him a saw of grain later. Now, lechora, there should be a problem of saw b'saw, there should be a problem of ribis in it. But when he's doing it in order to plant, then it's mutter, for reasons which we'll see in the Gemara. Means I lend you a saw of wheat now when it's worth $10, and later on you're going to repay me a saw when it's worth $12, and that's a problem of ribis. It's not ribis d'araisa because we didn't arrange it at the time, we didn't pre-arrange it, but nevertheless it's ribis d'araisa. Here, when he's lending to them in order to plant,
so
it's mutter. Here, it's mutter for reasons which we'll see in the Gemara. Have a loyal lechel, but not if he's lending it to them in order to eat. Now, Shahoyer Rav Gamliel, Malva Aris of Chitin B'Chitin, Lazera B'Yoyke, V'Huzlu. Now, Rav Gamliel used to do like this. The Mishnah has to inform us that this is the halacha. You're allowed to lend them Lazera and get the exact amount back, even if it goes up in price, because you should know Rav Gamliel did not do like that. Rav Gamliel would lend his Arisim, Chitin B'Chitin, wheat on condition that they repay him the same amount of wheat, Lazera, for planting, now what would happen is, if originally the price of wheat was higher when he lent it to them, and later on it went down, or originally the price was lower and then it went up, either way, he would only have them pay him according to the cheaper price. Meaning, he wouldn't necessarily always get the same amount of grain back. If originally a saw was going for $10, and when he lent it to them, and now by the time they pay him back, it's worth 12, he would only take from them 5/6 of the sum, $10 worth at the current prices. And the other way around, if originally it was 10 and later on it went down to 8, he would take from them one sum, even though that sum is only worth $8 now.
And therefore...
That's what Rav Gamliel would do. And well, the loy mifnei shahalacha came, now not that the halacha is like that. The halacha, technically, he would have been allowed to take a full sum from them. But he wanted to be machmir on himself. So that's what the
but
point.
But not more than a sar.
No, he would never take more than a sar. He'd take a sar or the value of the original sar, whichever is less. But the halacha is not like that. Rabbi Gamliel was machmir himself. The actual halacha is you're allowed to get back one sar. You're allowed to get back the same
more
sar.
Than that, then it would be really.
Yeah.
So how much is a
sar
again?
A sar is about, it's actually a measure of volume. It's not really a measure of weight. It's a volume, it's, I don't know, in terms of weight, it would be, I don't know, I think it's 20 pounds, give or take. Yeah, let's call it a bushel. Turn it up on. Like the Mishnah said, you're allowed to lend your oris grain for planting. Now, the Braitha gives an extra detail that the Mishnah had not mentioned. When is this talking about that's allowed if the oris has not actually gone into the field and started working it yet? Also, but if he already went into the field, then it's also.
Why?
So we have to ask, my shna tani didan the loyka maflik ben yorod or ben la yorod, or my shna tana borod the maflik ben yorod or ben la yorod. Why is our Mishnah not making that distinction? And the Braitha is. And it can't just be the Braitha is arguing with the Mishnah, because the Braitha evidently is coming to explain the Mishnah. Amar Rava, Rav Idi Azvara Niali. It's like this. Rav Idi explained it to me as follows. It depends. There's different minhagim in different places. But after the Tani Didan, in the place where the Tana of our Mishnah lived, Arisa Yahud Bizra, it was normal that it's the Oris who's supposed to provide the seeds for planting. He's supposed to provide them, and later on, he's going to get some percentage of the crop, and he'll get himself paid back that way. Therefore, Bein Lo Yorad, so therefore, whether the Oris actually started work or not, Kamadala Yahud Bizra, as long as the Oris has not done his what he's supposed to do, provide the seeds, Motsi Masalikle. The odor can fire him. So even, let's say, the guy already plowed, but then he comes to the Balabas and says, I don't have any grain to plant it. In the place where the Tana of Om Mishnah came from, the Balabas would say, well, you're responsible to provide the grain. You don't have. I'm firing you. I'm finding somebody else who will have grain and will be able to plant it. Yes. So therefore, the point is, when he borrows from him wheat in order to plant it, effectively what it is that it's not there's no problem of ribis, even if the price of grain goes up later, because we consider only now we consider the deal is therefore that he's going to be getting less of the crop because he should have been providing the seeds and like that. That's going to be deducted from the amount that he gets at the end.
The deal was
normally he would get, let's say, 25% of the crop. Right. But the deal was if he provides the seeds. Like this way he's not, and he's going to the boss and saying, I want to borrow seeds from you for this purpose, that'll end up being deducted from that amount. So therefore, there's no halva over here. It's originally, instead of getting 25%, then the deal is, I'm going to get 25% minus however many saws. So therefore, there's no ribis involved. There was no loan. Effectively. It's just we renegotiated the Oris's contract based on this. So therefore that's what the Gemara says. So therefore when the Oris goes and starts working the field, the deal is to begin with he's going to be getting a lesser amount than a normal Oris would. But there's no halva involved over here. It's just instead of getting 25%, I'm going to be getting 24%, let's say. The 1% accounting, but not for the plowing, for the fact that I didn't have the seeds, for the lack of seeds, yeah.
Right.
Because after all, the Balabas had the option to fire me altogether, see. But Asra, the Tana Bara, the Kikanachis, when he goes down into the field to start working it, he's going down into the field on the understanding that he is going to be getting less than a regular artist because he didn't have seeds available. But after the Tana Bara, whereas in the place where the Tana of the Braisa lived, Mori Ara Yoy Bizra, the usual arrangement was that the owner of the property is the one who's responsible to provide seeds. And in this case, Rashi says, in this case, this particular Balabas decided to put that responsibility on the Oris. So if the artist had not actually started work yet, demotzi masalik lay, where then the Balabas sets the conditions to begin with. The Balabas can say, I'm only hiring you on condition that you provide the seeds. Fine, no seeds, then no yurida. Therefore, ki kanachas abatam al kanachas. Same idea then. If he's willing to go and work under those conditions, it means he's willing to take less than he would have otherwise to deduct the amount of the seeds. Iyorad, but if the guy already started work based on the usual understanding that the Baba boss is going to provide the seeds, and then the guy says, actually, no, I'm not providing them. I expect you to provide them. Deloy Motsi Masalik. Now the owner does not have the ability to fire him on that basis because the owner is the one who changed the terms unilaterally.
The owner said what? Because
this is the place where normally the owner supplies the seeds.
Right.
So like this, he hired an artist. And the artist assumed that will be the usual thing, that you will provide the seed. So the artist starts work. Then a few days later, the Baba boss comes and tells him, sorry, I want to change things. I want you to provide the seed. Well, he doesn't have the ability to fire him on that basis. Also, so therefore, it would be also because therefore it would be a loan. And therefore it would be a loan, and therefore you have the usual solve-the-solve problem.
How would it be a loan?
Because that's what it is, therefore. Why? You're going to continue working. I don't have the ability to fire you. However, I don't want to provide the seed. I don't want to have to be. If I'm going to be providing them, it means I'm lending them to you,
right?
Because I consider it your responsibility to do it. Later on, I expect you to pay me back that amount of seed. Well, then you have a problem of ribis. Okay, turn it up on him. A person is allowed to say to somebody else, "Lend me a quart of wheat." And he establishes what is the value of this wheat according to the current prices.
How much is a core?
A core is 30 saw. So if a saw is about 20 pounds, then a core is about 500-600 pounds. But again, it's really a measure of volume, not of weight, really,
bushel.
Or whatever. Yeah, no, if we said a saw is a bushel, then a core would be like, yeah. So a person can say, lend me a quart of wheat. He can establish, let's say a quart of wheat at current prices is worth $1,000. And the deal will be if later on the prices fall, if instead a quart is worth 900, then I will give you a quart of wheat, even though now it's only worth 900. And the deal will be if prices go up, instead of giving you wheat, where there would be the saw-the-saw problem, then instead I'll give you $1,000. You're allowed to do that. Okay, the question is, Valet Kosta, that's what he means. He can give him wheat that's only worth 900. He prearranged that he's going to give him 1,000. Right, what the Braisa means is like this. If he did not establish something like that, then if the price goes down, he can give him a quart of wheat because there's no problem with ribis, because it's not worth more. But if the price goes up, you're going to have a saw-by-saw problem. Therefore, you have to give him the value. You have to give him the 1,000. You can't give him a quart of wheat because a quart of wheat at this point is going to be worth 1,100.
You give him the initial
price. Okay. Mishnah says, we'll try to do at least some of Ayin Hay and do a few more minutes, see how much of it we can do. We won't get to the end of the parak. That'll take us too long, but we'll see what we can do. Mishnah says, a person is not allowed to say to somebody else, lend me a quart of wheat, and I will pay you later on when the grain is in the granary. Because the prices may go up. That's the saw-by-saw problem. Actually, the Rambam understands it slightly differently. There's not so much a saw-by-saw problem if you don't specify when you're going to pay him back. Because you always have the option of paying him while the prices are still stable. But if you specifically tell him Lagurden, which is many months from now, where the prices are very likely to change, then you're not allowed to.
You're not.
That's the point. According to the Rambam, if he had said Lagurden, if he had just said Halveni Kurchitim, there wouldn't be a saw-by-saw problem as long as the prices are stable right now. Because he always has the ability to pay him back now, and therefore even if he ends up paying him later, it's not a big deal. But if he specifically says, I'm going to pay you at the Gurden, when we know many months from now, later on in the season, when the price of life, then it would be a problem.
That's our garnet.
Yeah. Aval Oimele, however, you are allowed to say to a person, Halveni ach yovibni ayacham samachteach. He can tell him, lend me until my son comes or until I find the key, because then, yeshloi, because then he actually has it in his possession. And therefore,
what do you mean? Oh, yeah.
He actually has it in his possession. He's just waiting for his son or for the key or whatever. So then the whole problem of Sabasa is only Dirabanan, and we're not worried about it when Yeshua. Yeah, the Mishnah had to tell us. We've been talking about it in the Gemara. We never had it in the Mishnah until now. The Hillel Oyser. However, Hillel says that that is also. Hillel says that even Adshiyav ibn or Adshem Samateach, basically he doesn't hold of the Yeshua principle. Similarly, Hillel used to say, "Latalva isha kikel lachavacha." A woman is not allowed to lend a loaf of bread to her friend, unless they figure out the actual value. Shama yoku chitin v'nimtza bo'ez l'day ribis, because the price of wheat may go up, and you'll have ribis. So, in other words, if you borrow a loaf of bread, which is right now bread is selling for $2 a loaf, you have to say it's a $2 loaf. If later on, by the time I pay you back, the bread is going to be worth $2.50 a loaf, then I'm only going to pay you $2 worth of bread. Amarapuna. So the Gemara says, Amarapuna, yesh lo sa.
That's not the halacha.
No, well, we'll see in the Gemara, but yeah. Amarapuna, yesh lo sa lo vasa. If you had a sa of wheat, you're allowed to borrow a sa against it. If you have two sa, then you're allowed to borrow two sa. You're only allowed to borrow as much as you actually have right now. Because then we can use the yeshle principle. And you could, in principle, pay back with what you have right now. Therefore, that's allowed. But if you have one sa and you want to borrow 10, then no, because you don't have, there's no yeshle.
But obviously that doesn't go back to the Tanakama.
No. The Tanakama didn't say one way or the other. The Rav Hona can't be arguing with the Tanakama.
Right.
The Tanakama just said you're allowed to say I want to borrow Achiyove Bni, for example. But Rav Hona says only if you actually have the amount that you want to borrow. Rabbi Yitzchak says no. Afilu yeshlei sa loy ve'ala kama korin. No, even if you only have one sa, you can borrow many korin against it, because we can say like this: when you borrow wheat from somebody, or whatever kind of produce it is from somebody, it's not like you have to pay him back with the wheat that you have right now. A kor is 30 sa. So let's say, for example, so I borrow a kor from you. Now let's say I only have a sa right now. It's not like that saw necessarily belongs to you. I could go and eat that saw or sell it or whatever and pay you at some later date.
Right.
So therefore, effectively what it is then that one of the ones that I borrowed, therefore can be considered against the ones that are available in the marketplace. Because I don't have Yeshle right now, but there is a price. There is Yat Asar. And meanwhile, I can be borrowing another one against the one that I have now.
Yatsa Ashar, obviously. What's the Chiddush?
No, but it's not even Yatsa Ashar. No, not Yatsa. But at the moment, for right this moment, there is a stable price. So therefore, like this, I'm borrowing a kur from you. What we say is like this: one saw goes corresponding to the saw that I have in my granary right now. However, that one, there's no shibud on it to you. I could just as well sell it and pay you back with a different saw that I will buy right now. So therefore, each saw that's available in my granary is available to borrow another saw against, because each one, conceivably, I could be buying a different saw and paying you back and using the one saw.
The price is stable, yes.
No, not as long as even if the prices are not stable for a week at a time, even if the price is only stable for today, even if the price is only stable for today. Let's look in the Rashi Kama Kura, and it might be easier to understand. Each saw that you have, we say, this one will be instead of it. Because the original saw is not, there's no kinyan that the malva made on it, the saw that I have in my granary right now. I, the loiva, have the ability to eat it or to sell it. So it comes out like this. The saw that I borrowed is being charged against money, against payers that are available in the marketplace. Because I could right now take money and go buy those payers from the marketplace. Even if not Yot Sasha, right now, at the moment, there is a price available. Then the one that I have in my granary is available to borrow another one against it. So therefore, when he borrowed, each one he borrowed, it was mutter. Let's say he borrowed one saw and ate it, and let's say he also ate the original one that he had. Now, when he did the original hava, it was permissible because he had a saw against it. Fine, he will pay grain. He'll pay wheat. The same thing. Each saw that he borrowed was borrowed beheter. Because you always have the one. In other words, you think of it like this. I have a saw over here. I'm borrowing from you all these sim over here. Now let's say I borrowed one saw. There's two possibilities. I could either right away return you this saw, or I would be entitled to eat both saws and then go out to the store and buy another saw and pay you right now. There's no problem of ribbis in that, because at least for today, the price is stable. By the same logic, in other words, by the same logic, once I borrowed this saw from you and I also borrowed this saw, so now what we have is all three of them could have been eaten. One of them was available at the time. One of them I borrowed against. The other one, let's say there's a potential SAR out there in the marketplace that I could have bought, which would have been to pay this one. The original one would have been available to pay this one, and so you can repeat like that. And so you have that no matter how much you're borrowing, as long as you had one originally, you can have like your sort of trading back and forth between yourself and the marketplace, and therefore it's allowed. There is a bit of discussion among the Mefarshim. Are we saying, therefore, that it would have to be that, let's say, that you're measuring him out to him one saw at a time, or would it be even okay, even if he gave you one entire core all at one time? Could we break it down into saws like that? Which Tosfos discusses that. Tosfos brings from the Rivan, one of the Balei Tosfos, that no, that all it means is you can do one at a time.
Yeah.
However, the Rivan says, you can give him the full quarter of time and say, I want you to be koina it one saw at a time. Because then you have, you're koina the one saw. You could have given the saw that you have now, but instead you're going to eat the saw that you have and buy another one, etc.
But it's just one saw. Just one saw he gives you.
Yeah. But then Tosfos continues, no, miun nira, it seems that you don't have to be medactic with that. You're allowed to take the whole thing all at one time. We will consider la halacha that it's broken down into individual saws. And therefore, it's allowed.
So let's say I give you 30 saws, one core.
Right. And so as long as I had one saw,
you had
in
one
principle,
saw.
I could have used that one saw to pay you back one of your sin, and then let's say, for example, taken another one of your saws and sold it in the marketplace and bought another one and have another one to pay you back, and so on and so forth. We have. You can trade back and forth like that.
By the time, I mean, after you sell three or four of them, maybe the prices will change.
No, but in principle, you could have done one after the other. One, two, three, four, whatever. I have them all, you know.
Very quickly.
Yeah. In fact, Reb Chiya taught a braisa which supports what Reb Yitzchak said. Tipas yayin ein loy, tipas shemen ein loy. That, when is it also, if you don't have a drop of wine or you don't have a drop of oil, evidently, the implication is if you have even a drop, you're able to borrow many other drops or even gallons of wine or oil against it. And that, in fact, is halacha. Then we said the Hillel oyster. We said that Hillel said it's also to borrow even short term like that because prices may go up. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel, halacha kedivrei the Hillel. So Rav Nachman says, in the name of Shmuel, the halacha is like Hillel. However, the less Hillel sakabaseh. However, the later Amaroyim said, the halacha is not like Rav Nachman in that. And the halacha is not like Hillel. You are allowed to borrow short term without it being a problem. And therefore, for example, you can borrow a loaf of bread from your neighbor because there's no, and according to the Rambam, even if it ends up being long term because you didn't say specifically that it's going to be long term. And therefore, it's allowed. Since the whole thing is only the drabbana.
Right.
Therefore, it's allowed. Then we said, the Mishnah had said that Hillel had said a woman is not allowed to borrow a loaf of bread unless you figure out the monetary value. Again, that's all part of what Hillel was saying. But the Chacham say you're allowed to borrow stam and pay back stam. We don't assume that prices are going to go up.
Within
a short period of time, or if you're not marked on it, or whatever. If you have people of a group that are machpid on each other, now normal people, one reason why this is allowed with the bread, let's say, is because normal people, when they borrow a loaf of bread from each other and later on pay it back, you don't worry about the value of it. So therefore, there's no problem with it. However, he's saying, if you have people who are machpid on each other, they don't want to be moichel even on a small amount, so when they lend each other, they make sure it's accurate to the nth degree.
What about in the times of war, when that is very, very...
That would be machpiding. So therefore, you should know. So if they do this kind of thing on Yom Tov, or Shabbos for that matter, if they do that, they would be over on measuring or weighing or minyan or counting. As well as that you're not allowed to borrow and pay back on Yom Tov, because all these things, you're not allowed to do these things on Shabbos, you're not allowed to measure and whatever on Shabbos, you're not allowed to borrow in a way where you're going to have to pay back a different amount, and not a different amount, but a different object, as opposed to you can borrow something where you're going to pay shoyl, where you bring back the same object, but not borrowing where you're going to have to pay back a different, where you're going to have to give back a different thing, like borrow money or food or whatever. Because you may come to write it down.
On the second day of Yom Tov, they borrow candles. Can you do that?
That's fine because they're not makpid in zeh al zeh. You borrow candles. It's not expected that you're going to make sure. And if you bring back a different number of candles, if you bring back fewer candles, they're not going to object. And if the candles are worth less, so, you know, if you have, you know, you have different brands of candles, some are worth more than others, they're not going to object. But if they're makpidim, then you're over on all those things. And according to Hillel, they would also be over on the issue of ribbis. Now, the halacha is not like Hillel, but nevertheless, yes. Actually, the Raiva understands it differently. That what we're saying is only the loivin of purin is biyamtiv. The other one, only the loivin of purin, only the borrowing and lending is something that would be also on yamtiv. The other ones, he says, what we're saying, mishum midro, mishum mishkel, mishum minyan, is if they're not actually careful to the nth degree, they will be over on gezel. Because if one of them is makbid on the other, you have to give me back exactly what, you have to make sure we each get exactly the same portion. Neither of us gets even a drop more than the other. Well, if you don't, if you accidentally cut yourself a larger slice or whatever, then you're over on gezel. You could assume, I guess, they're not. But if you know they're makbid, then yes. Then Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel another deal. Tamid Chachamim mutarim lo b'zemi zeberibis. That Tamid Chachamim are allowed to borrow from each other at ribis. Wait. My timer made the yadi de ribis asura because they know good and well that ribis is asur. Or matonahu de yavu adadi. What it is in that case they're just giving a present to each other. Now, there is a lot of qualification about that. First of all, Tosfos says that it can only be if it's a small amount, where you know the person would have been willing to give it to you even if you hadn't lent it previously. So therefore, it can't be considered ribis. It's considered you're good friends.
Using the Russian ribis.
You would think that you are, after all, getting back more than you gave. So in that sense, it's like ribis, but it's not really ribis because you're not doing it you're not doing it as ribis. You're doing it because you're friends and you know full well that ribis is also. You're doing it because you're friends and you regularly give each other extra little amounts. It only applies to a Talmud Chacham because an Amoris, you can't trust that kind of thing. You know, ribis is a very powerful thing.
It seems to imply that when you know the dinim of ribis, you can do something.
No, you can't do ribis. You can't do something which is ribis daraisa, which would be
of course,
for So for example, to say in advance, that's the thing. To say in advance, for example, right. that I will pay you extra, that would be awesome.
Right.
What we're saying, if at the end you give them a little bit extra because they're good friends and they know each other, then you or even some of us say the vote is when you lend him to begin with, it can't really be considered a loan between friends. I gave you a present. Later on, you're giving me a present back. It's not really a loan. Yeah, but again, being Tamar Chachamim, they know ribis is ribis, and they know that they're not doing it beside ribis. Yeah, I mean, there's other, you know, it can't you, even they can't do it too often. You have to be careful, you know, what caliber of Tamar Chacham are you anyway? Yeah. Okay. Shmuel Avur Barini. Thus, we find, for example, Shmuel says to another Tamar Chacham, Avur Barini, Halveni Meya Pilpulin, lend me 100 peppers, but Meya Veestrin Pilpulin. Where in the end I may pay back 120, va'arich, and this is okay.
That's kitzus.
No, so okay, so that's so. Rashi doesn't specify. Rashi says it's allowed because matana ba'alma. But other one second, other meforshim explain when Shmuel is saying va'arich. Okay, so Rashi explains va'arich means it's okay. Other meforshim explain va'arich means it's up to me. If I want, I will pay you more if I feel like it. However, I'm not obligating myself to, you're not obligating me, therefore there's no ribis klutza, and therefore it falls under the heter that he said. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, another din, Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, a person is allowed to lend money to his children or the members of his household at ribis, in order to give them a taste of ribis. What does that mean? Rashi says it means like this, they should realize when they see they have to pay back more than they got, it gives them tsar. That way they will realize how serious is taking ribis from another yid, how serious is the punishment for it. Other mafarshim say the other way around.
In other words, you can't.
What?
For chinuch, you can't.
You know what? The lav milsihi, however, this is not correct. Mishum de osi lemistrach, because on the contrary, it may backfire. It may be that now they start desiring, look how much you can make from ribis,
sure.
And then yeah. Other mafarshim actually explain the other way around. The mutalat iman tam ribis is the other way around. Not that it causes them tsar, but rather they realize how wonderful, how profitable it is to receive ribis. Therefore, when they get older and they stay away from it, they'll get a greater tsar for it. However, the problem is, again, it may backfire. They may end up actually wanting to try to keep that, and therefore you can't do that. And that's taka the halacha. That's the halacha. So even for yet. Which, by the way, before I should point out, you know, Bonham and McVeigh say, I mean, their money is your money. It's not like really, it's not like their money in the first place. It's like taking from one pocket and putting it in the other.
Even after
13
years old,
or not. That's what we mean. Bonham and means that there's some Ohasha Khane, but even them is not allowed for this problem. Shem to Asin and Mishra, because they may. Do you want to go a little further? Or?
We're good.
What?
We're good. Good. Where do you want to go?
Okay, so let's look a few more minutes, I guess. Okay. Mishnah says, Omer Adam Lachaveri, a person is allowed to say to his friend, Nakishimi, you pull weeds with me today, Ba'an Nakishimach, and another day I will pull weeds with you. There's no issue of ribbis. Or Adur Imi Ve'adur Imach, or you hoe the ground with me today, and I will dig the ground with me today, and I'll dig with you another day. However, he cannot tell him, you pull weeds with me now, and I will hoe with you later, because one may be more difficult than the other. There can be agonetta involved over here, that he's waiting to get paid back for the work that he did until later on, and therefore he's willing to do a harder work.
I suppose to say.
So if you say nakashimi va nakashimach, it's basically the same kind of work. So therefore, any minor difference that there be is not going to be a problem that's going to be significant in Allah. But when it's different kinds of work, then yes. Continues the Mishnah. Kol yibay garit echad. For this purpose, all days, all of the dry season is considered one period. Meaning, I can say, for example, you come pull weeds with me in June, and I will come and pull weeds with you in August. Between June and August, the days are a little bit different in length. Doesn't matter.
Not much.
Doesn't matter.
Even if there's a drought?
Garit means the dry season. And all of the rainy season is also considered to be one period. Same idea. But you can't say, for example, I'll plow with you, I'll help you plow in the dry season, and you'll help me plow during the wet season, because the wet season is harder. It can be harder because, for example, with muddy, the animals get stuck, etc. And the Ravid says the other way around also. Sometimes it can be, or the Meiri, I think it says that sometimes it can be the other way around also. During the dry season, it may be harder because the ground is harder. Rav Gamliel, yes, ribis mukdemes, yes, ribis mukheres. There is such a thing as pre-ribis and post-ribis, and those are also awesome. Kate said, what does that mean? Nothing ain't of lobus hemen. Suppose that a person, so Reuven has in mind, he intends to borrow money from Shimon, and he sends him money in advance, a pre-gift, like, and he says, b'shvil shatalveni, I'm giving this to you in order that you should lend me, zuri ribis mukdemes. Lava haymenu, the hechzalos ma'usav. Now, what happens? He borrowed from him.
Right.
Sort of, but yeah. Well, the point is not a bribe. A bribe is with dayanim, but here it's a ribus mukdemes. Which, by the way, we learned earlier in the parak that if he doesn't explicitly tell him, it may be mutter. We have a case of Ravino where they were giving him extra wine afterwards. There's no explicit statement that it's because you lent me money or whatever. Lava haymenu, vehechzalos ma'usav. If he borrowed from him and eventually paid him back, later on, he sends him a gift for Omer, and he says, "Bishvil ma'osach hashayi b'teil esensi." I'm giving this to you because your money was sitting idle by me. You didn't have the use of it. Zuri ribis mocheres. That would be late ribis, which is also awesome. Reb Shimon, yes, ribis dvarim. Reb Shimon says there is also such a thing as ribis with words. For example, lo yom aloy daki ba'ish pleni m'makom pleni. For example, the loiver is not allowed to tell the malver, you should know that so-and-so has come from this place. Like, tell him news that otherwise you wouldn't have been telling him before, which you're doing him a favor because he lent me money. There's a different understanding in it that I think the Rambam has, that means the malver is not allowed to tell the loiver, keep an eye out and inform me if this person comes. In other words, according to the Rambam, it may be if the loiver comes voluntarily and says it might not be a problem. But if the malver tells him, that would be it. The Eilo Oven Beloy says that, continues the Mishnah, the following people who are involved in a loan with Ribis are all over on an Esser, on a Lois Esser rather, Hamalva, Vahaloiva, Vahore, Vahaedim. The lender, the borrower, the guarantor, and the Edim. Vahamrim Achasofer, and the Chamse also the Sofer who writes the Shtat. As follows, the Lavim are as follows, over Mishram Lois Sikin, they're over on the Isser, on the Lois Esser, on two lois that says that it says in Parashas Ba'ar, lois sitein, that you should not give ribis, or mishum al tikach meito, and the mitzvah not to take ribis, or mishum lois siya lois convention. Lois sitein means, as kasmacha lois sitein, sorry, as kasma cholo titan levin, we learned at the beginning of the parish, because they have as kasma cholo titan levin neshef, you're not allowed to give him your money for ribis or for neshef, or marbis le titan
achlafa.
That you, the lender, are going to give him money. That
you're going to give him money that you to lend.
No. That you are lending him money at ribis.
Okay.
Yeah. You are not allowed to give him your money, meaning to lend him money at ribis. Umishum al tikach meita, and the mitzvah that the next pasuk says, don't take from him neshach the tabis. Umishum laisit. We'll see in the Gemara who is over on each of these individual on each of these individual things. Umishum. The Mishnah is just listing them all. You're also over on the mitzvah that the Torah says don't act to him like a creditor, which means, as the Gemara will say, like if you know he doesn't have what to pay you and you're harassing him. Also the pasuk in Mishpatim that says don't place on him neshech. And also you're over on the mitzvah of lifne iver, because the edim and the orev and whatever are making it possible for it to happen, and therefore that's lifne iver. The Tiferes Yisrael, by the way, says the Mishnah didn't really have to quote the part v'yareis melekecha ani Hashem. It just did that in order, because the Rebbe didn't want to end the parak on a bad note, with lifne iver l'sitin mechshol, because it was the last Mishnah in the parak. So therefore he ends up on a positive note. The positive continues v'yareis melekecha ani Hashem. Gemara says, Tanya, Reb Shimon Yechoyim. I mean, Naim Menoshe B'Chaverim Mana. How do we know that if a person is owed a mana by somebody else, the Einu Roger LaHakdim LaShalim, and this loiva does not usually greet him with Shalim, Sha'asa LaHakdim LaShalim. He's not allowed to go and greet and meet him to greet him with Shalim. Tam 11 Neshach called Dover Ashi Yishach. Therefore, the pasuk says Neshach of any word that can be taken as Neshach after the Dibur also. So even speaking is also. There is an interesting. So are you allowed to say thank you? So actually, the Altadebbe, for example, says no. However, the Achronim, the more contemporary Achronim, talk about the pros and cons. On the one hand, maybe if you can't say thank you, can you maybe say tizkul mitzvus? One argument is maybe yes. That's not giving him something. That's the other argument is Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach actually argues on the contrary. Though you're giving him a bracha. If anything, maybe thank you is better. Because thank you, at least you're saying, in order not to look like a grobyung, you know, not to look like an unmannered person. Tizkul mitzvah amounts to giving him a bracha. There's a real question about it in halal. We said ve'elu ovrin, and we said the following people, we listed all the people who are involved in the loan who are all over on various things. Omer Abaya, it's like this. Malva over b'kulon. The malva is over on all of the ones that are mentioned in the Mishnah. He is giving his money to begin with, expecting ribis, so he's over on Losikin. He is taking ribis at the end. He acts as a nosha when he presses him to pay him. That's Losia like nosha. He is Losis Simonol of Neshech. He arranged with him that there's going to be Neshech, so he's over on that as well. And he's over on Lifne Iver, because the Loiver is over on the Easter of giving him Neshech. So therefore, the Malver is over on all of them.
It's four Lavin.
Five Lavin.
Five
Lavin. Plus also an S that we said at the beginning of the parakeet. Loiva over mishum lo sashich la'achicha, or la'achicha lo sashich, the loiva is v'lifnei ever lo sitim mechshol, the loiva is over on three isurim. The isur lo sashich la'achicha, which means don't cause your brother to take neshech, which that's addressed to the loiva, or la'achicha lo sashich, another pasuk that says, the next pasuk says, don't give neshech to your brother, and also v'lifnei ever lo sitim mechshol, because you're causing loiva, the malva rather, to be over on the lois that they're taking this. Orev, Edim ain't an Orev and Elamashim Lois Simon Olav Neshech. And the Orev and the Edim are only over mitzad the view of mitzad the Isser of Lois Simon Olav Neshech. Apparently, the reason why they're not over on Lifnei Iver Lois Sitten Michshol is the Gemara explains in Avodah Zarah. Lifnei Iver is only when the thing couldn't have happened without you. Classic case that the Gemara mentions over there is, let's say, for example, you have a Nazir on one side of the river and you are on the other side with a bottle of wine, and you pass it across the river to him, he would have had no way of getting it, otherwise you are over. As opposed to the Arev and the Edim over here, if you weren't an Arev, somebody else could have been an Arev. If you weren't the Edim, somebody else could have been the Edim. Therefore, you're not over on Lifnei Iver, at least not Midaraisa. Midarabon, you are, but Midaraisa, you're not. Midaraisa, though, there's the Lois of Simun, which means don't be involved in the placing of Neshech. And they were.
The placing of Neshech.
The placing meaning the arrangement that there's going to be Neshech. And here they were. Tanya. Reb Shimon over, Malva Ribis, Yosef Mashem Avichim Mafsidim. People who lend out at Ribis lose more than they gain, because we learned earlier in the panic, the person lends out at risk, their money ends up getting dissolving away. And not only that, Moshe Rabbeinu chacham v'terdase emes. They make Moshe Rabbeinu out to be wise, and they make his Torah out to be true. On the simple meaning, Rashi says, that means the Gemara is using a euphemism. It means that they're acting as though Moshe Rabbeinu is not a chacham, and as if the Torah is not. But I mean, that they're saying, Ilu hoya yedei Moshe Rabbeinu she'eh revach b'davar. Look at this. If Moshe had realized how much profit there is in ribbis, lo hoya kosva, he never would have written. So therefore, they're acting as though Moshe didn't know what he's talking about. Marsha has a different explanation of this. Marsha says, Yotzu mashma bichim mafsidim means like this. You're thinking, you who lend out at ribbis are thinking, okay, so I'm what kind of neshech, what kind of abiding from him something that he doesn't have? He's earning money from what I lent him. Therefore, all I'm doing is I'm taking from his earnings. You should know, not necessarily, because you may end up taking more than what he earned. Yotzu mashma bichim, more than what he earns, mafsidim, he ends up losing by ribbis to you. And then, what's the Moshe Rabbeinu Chacham b'terasa emes? Is it means that the Marshal says it doesn't, it's not a euphemism. It means they're saying, fine, Moshe was a chacham, the Torah is true. However, the Torah was assuming that you're lending out money and the guy is actually losing out money from the interest. They didn't realize that there's investments. They didn't realize that there's investments, there's ways you could be earning money, and therefore I'm not taking away from him anything he didn't have before. But that's not true. And the problem with it is you're implying as though the Torah is something that was written by human understanding, by Moshe Rabbeinu's understanding, that, okay, he didn't know how the modern business world works. And I'm not the course.
And besides that, even if you don't borrow more than he's earning, it's still prohibited.
That we know that, but that's the point. In other words, Marsha says, the Malva thinks like this. Okay, I agree the Torah says you're not allowed to take ribbis. But the Torah must have only meant the kind of thing where you're actually taking away
more
something from him than what he earns. But if you take away from what he earns, then it shouldn't be a problem. Fine, Moshe is a chacham and the Torah is emet. But the Torah is not considering the case, but you're still, it's still up to courses to say that. Now, how do we know if a person is owed a money by somebody else, and he knows the other guy doesn't have what to pay him back? You're not allowed to walk in front of him, like, because then he'll see you and be embarrassed. That's the pasuk we mentioned in the Mishnah. Don't be like a creditor to him. Don't act to him like a creditor, where Noisha is a creditor. He's going to see you and get embarrassed. Don't do that. You want him to pay you back? Take
him the street.
Yeah, well, not in some walking in the street, but like doctor walking in front of him, doctor walking where you know he'll see you so that he's embarrassed. You have a problem, take him to base him, but don't get. Rav Ami and Rav Asi damitavai. Rav Ami and Rav Asi go further with that. They say, Kilu doni mishnei dinin. If you do that, if you embarrass the guy because he has to pay you money, it's as if you judged him with two punishments. It's as if you punished him with two punishments. Shanem, the pasuk says, Kavta enesh l'rashenu. The pasuk says, you've made people ride over our heads. The simple meaning is it's talking about the times of Golos, when the goyim ride over us. But Rashi explains, l'rashenu is the Aramaic word for a noshe, for a creditor, is rashia. So Kavta enesh l'rashenu, you've made people be like creditors to us. And the pasuk is
like my Chinese.
Yeah, and the pasuk continues, you've taken us through fire and water. So you see that if a person is being harassed by his creditor, it's like he's being punished with fire and water. Fire and water, actually, Marshall says, because you looked before, when a person is embarrassed, first the blood rushes to his face, which is like fire, and then it drains, which is like water. If a person has money and he lends it out to somebody else without edim, he is over on the issue of lifnei iver, because later on the loiver may feel free to deny it. There were no edim, I can get away with it. Or some of them are forced to say, maybe we're not saying he'll deliberately go and lie, but at least there's the possibility he'll forget. Later on, you take him to base, and he'll taka have forgotten, but yeah. Shlokesh says even further, if you do that, you're causing a curse for yourself. Because what happens? Later on, you go to this guy, new, where's my money? He says, I don't know what you're talking about. Everybody assumes that, what are you talking about? What are you harassing this guy? A tzaddik? You think he would have borrowed money from you and not pay it back? Must be your stam a nudnik, your stam hacking a machinik, and we should curse you for that. So he causes a curse for himself by doing that. The pasuk says, let the lips of evil be silent. Hadoyres al tzaddik osuk, who speak nonsense about the tzaddik, meaning people say that this person, this so-called malveh, this guy who's claiming to be a Malva must be a Russia who's talking badly against the Tzaddik and claiming that he lent him money when he really didn't. So in this connection, now, there's an interesting thing that we're saying you shouldn't do that. Nevertheless, we see, practically speaking, many people lend out money without Eidim nowadays. So there's different rationalizations that different Achronim give for it. Maybe if it's a small amount, you're not makbid. A number of other whatever a small amount is for you. There's a very interesting one that I saw that somebody points out. This is before the concept of Shavuot Hesed. Nowadays, since the time of the Gemara, there exists the concept of Shavuot Hesed. Midot, I used to remember, we learned at the beginning of the Sefta, if Reuven takes Shimon to Beis Din, you owe me money, and Shimon denies it all, that's it. Reuven has no recourse. The Amiroyim, in the times of Reb Nachman, they made the Takana of Shavuot Hesed. Nevertheless, Shimon will have to swear. So therefore, there's less of an issue with it. If in fact, Shimon denies the claim completely, fine, he'll swear a Shavuot Hesed. We still do that nowadays. So therefore, it's a Shavuot Midrabanan. So therefore, fine, if Shimon swears, okay, he's potter, then that's it. Okay, it was a mistaken claim. And if not, then he'll end up paying. So then, yeah. Okay. So one time, the Rabbanan told Rav Ashi, you should know, Ravina keeps everything that the Chachamim said. So he decided to test him. One time late on Erev Shabbos, when everybody's busy getting ready for Shabbos, he sends him a message. Would you please send me 10 zuzim as a loan? The Israelites, because I found a small parcel of land which I'd like to buy, and I have to do it in a hurry. So Ravina said he wanted to see. Is Ravina going to do like we said and lend him without aid, which would be going against what the Chachamim say? Well, he wanted to test him. This is a busy time. Is he going to say? Ok Shalachle, so Ravina sent back a message. Nasi Mar Sadi, please bring Edim, the Nichtiv Ksava, and write out a shtar. Shalachle, Rav Ashi says, Afilo Anon Nami. What, you're expecting that from me also? You think I'm going to deny the loan? Shalachle, Ravina sends back to him. Kolshekin Mar, on the contrary, all the more so with somebody like you. But Torid Vigirse, you're so busy with your learning, Mishtali, you may forget, but go to call them, ask me, and then I'll be causing a curse for myself, like we said before. It's a respectful way of saying, in other words, that yes, there is a possibility with you also. You might forget, and yeah.
And what happened?
So that's it. He realized that Ravina passed the test. He really does keep everything that Chachamim say. Turn it up on him. There are three kinds of people who cry out and they're not answered. Rashi says it means Rebasin Shalmatza. They come with a claim to Beis Din, and Beis Din says, we can't help you. Marsha says it may even mean Beis Din Shalmaila as well, because each of these cases is somebody who caused their own trouble. So therefore, like, even the Eidishter is not going to intervene on their behalf.
Because they're not something too much?
No, because you caused the trouble for yourself. The Elohim, they are as follows. One is Mishyesh Lemoris and Malvaris and Shalai Be'edim. One is, like we just said, somebody who has money and lends it out without Edim. If he comes to Beis Din afterwards, how you talk, and I lent that guy money, he's not paying back. Do you have any proof? No, too bad. And even the Marshal said, even Beis Din Shamayla. Too bad. He didn't listen to what Bachman said. Number two is somebody who acquires a master for himself. We'll see in the next line what that means. And number three, Umishi Ishte Meshela fellow. Number three is a person whose wife dominates him. Why would it be she dominates him? Is one reason might be, for example, she comes from a rich family. She has, let's say, a very large silver or nadin or whatever, and you're poor and you can't afford to pay it off. So therefore, like, you end up being under her thumb. Well, that was your problem in the first place. Who told you to marry? Okay, kona odin la'atimai. What is kona odin la'atimai? Three possibilities. One version is it means if you claim that your money belongs to a guy. Now, let's say, for example, why might you do that? Let's say, for example, people know you're doing business. People know that you have money that you're doing business with. You don't want people to know that you're rich. So you falsely claim, you know what, I'm not doing it. This isn't my own money. I'm managing it on behalf of this guy. What happens? The guy overhears you saying that. He arranges for Adim to overhear. And then later on, he takes you to court. Hey, you admitted that this money you're trading with belongs to me. Pay it back. That's kind of other last me. You voluntarily made him a master over yourself. Another version is that it means somebody who signs away his property to his children while he's alive. So you can do that. We'll learn in Baba Basri. You can do that. But nevertheless, at this point now, they control you, basically. They, yeah.
And you shouldn't do that?
You shouldn't do that. You're better off not doing that. There are cases where it's necessary for one reason or another, but it's not a good thing to do. If later on, again, if later on you have complaints against them and you go to Beis Din, well, too bad. Ikadamri, and a third version, the Bishle Bahamah. So suppose you have a person who's having a bad situation of it in one city, and he does not go to another city. If he stays where he's having a bad time of it, he's making the local malach who's in charge of the local mazel or whatever who's in charge of this area is my balabas. He could have left that area and gone to a different area, and if he chooses not to, it's his problem.
That's prophetic, because that's what the Jews could have done before the war.
I guess there is that, but yeah. Hey, it's also, I mean, they a lot of them didn't have much of a choice, in fairness, but yeah.
To what, to go out?
To go, a lot of them didn't have money or ability.
Gave them a choice to leave now.
You also needed money, you needed countries that were willing to accept you. And most countries at that period were not willing to accept Jews, were not willing to accept Jewish immigration, but yeah, okay. Hadron Aloch Ezer Nesha. First, agreement. Stay hot.